Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editor's meeting.
Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast episode 56. My name is Gareth Carter, and we're doing another remote and romantic special. James, how are you?
I wasn't informed that this was going to be romantic, otherwise I would have worn something special. But yeah, I'm doing all right, Gareth. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I was happy that we could squeeze this in, right?
Again, that sounds awfully romantic to me, but...
So, you've been keeping an eye out on stuff going down in the world of cool shit?
I have, and there wasn't a planned theme, but just based off of what's going on in the real world, in the advertising world, in the social media worlds, I've decided unilaterally to make this a bit of a themed episode, a special, if you want.
A special?
A special.
A special on top of it being a romantic special.
It's a romantic,
romantic special.
Yeah, exactly. It's a romantic remote special.
All right, cool. What are we talking about then?
Well, I was going to say one of the main things in the zeitgeist at the moment, but that's potentially up for debate, is the Women's World Cup. World Cup fever is upon us, except, and we could talk about this, it isn't that much of a fever at the moment. It's barely even a sniffle. The Women's World Cup kicked off actually this morning, and you and I were talking about this last night off the books. It doesn't feel like there's been that much of a buzz around the tournament at all yet, which is surprising considering this is meant to be, what, probably one of the biggest women's sporting events ever?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you told me when we were discussing earlier on in the week, you were like, oh, the Women's World Cup starts. And I'm like, what? Women's World? What? Really? Oh, thought that was a little bit later. It's funny, isn't it? Because we work in advertising and it's certainly been on our radar. We've certainly worked on briefs in and around it. You're integral on the MITRE account. So, you know, we're pretty entrenched in the fact that a lot of people are seeing this as a major opportunity. Brands seeing this as a major sponsorship or something that they could piggyback off and, you know, basically embrace and talk about. So you're right. I don't know if it's because we're two blokes. We're painfully aware this is a podcast at the moment about women's football and we are two blokes. Whether that's one of the reasons or it's something that hasn't really touched the sides of the target, young girls.
Is that the target? Who do you think it's easier to convert into being interested in women's football? Men or women who are already interested in football, or women or young girls who have absolutely no interest in football at all? Surely it has to be the former. It's easier to convert people who are already interested in men's football, because then otherwise you're saying that the main factor in determining your interest in something is whether or not they have the same genitalia as you, which obviously is just a bit mad.
Do you watch women's tennis?
When I have to, yeah. I mean, I went to Wimbledon. There was a ladies' game in between the men's games. So yeah, I stuck around. That's what's interesting, isn't it? There's a few examples of sports in which the women's game is taken pretty much as seriously as the men's game, like in tennis. Tennis is a good example because I think the prize money is now the same for men and women. But football and like cricket and rugby, they haven't quite broken through in that same way. And with that, I do wonder if it's because tennis doesn't have the same level of like fanaticism that you get with football, because a big part of football fandom and the obsession isn't just about the game that's being played. It's everything around it. It's so embedded into culture, in your growing up, your identity and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because after the World Cup, I think there was a real impact that it had afterwards of people sitting up and taking notice and going like, wait a second, this is the real deal. A, it's something that's quite galvanizing, and B, feel like sponsors can get behind this, because, you know, like, let's make no bones about it. We work in advertising. So that is quite often the conversations that we're in and around. How can brands be involved in this? In a meaningful way. One of the key things about women's football, which was highlighted and then sort of like doubled down in the Euros with the England win, is that it's not like men's football. So to your point, there is something interesting that it isn't like men's football. So what I'm getting at is, and again, this is from research that we've done with men and women, the women's game feels way more accessible for the fans, for the people that are already into it. They're closer to their idols, right? One of the key things is the American team was so cool, still are. Megan Rapinoe going on like chat shows and just acting normal. normal. You know how like footballers act? It always feels like we're not really being let into what they actually think.
But it's funny, Harry, sorry to interrupt, but Harry Kane was on Hot Ones the other day randomly, and he was talking about this. And I think it's not just men versus women. I think it's actually a bit of a difference in the way British versus American athletes communicate as well, because that's what Harry Kane was saying, that as a footballer in particular in this country, you're under so much scrutiny from the fans and from the media and from the public, from everyone, that you just end up giving these boring platitudes, media trained answers, and nobody ever really knows anything about you. Just talk about, oh, we're taking each game as it comes, we're relishing the opportunity, and all this sort of nonsense. Whereas probably part of it is they probably haven't bothered doing that as much with the women's team, so they're not as well media trained, which is why people actually probably end up finding that more approachable, because they're more human, it would seem, like you said.
Well, I think one of the things that we lean into when we're talking about women's sport is that it seems like fun to them. It seems like they're having fun. So park the actual sport for a second. Team sport is more than the 90 minutes you're playing it. It's about a lifestyle. It's about bonds. It's about traveling with your friends. It's about the benefits of being in a team. And when you get Megan Rapinoe, you know, arsing around and being funny and being really charming on...
Sorry, I want to go along with you. Is she charming and funny? I must have missed
that. Cool. She's definitely cool. Yeah, I've seen a couple of American chat shows where...
If you say so, Wokahuntas.
Yeah, I think there is something about them celebrating their position in a way that men's teams don't necessarily. I totally agree with Harry Kane's point. The British media are absolute arses and they will pull up anyone on anything, right? There is a fear factor that you can see in every footballer, every male footballer when they're being interviewed. All right, okay, cool. So Women's World Cup 2019 had really, really big eyeballs.
I'd say the better example is probably the Euros last year. Like by the end, maybe it was because it was in this country as well, but that set all the record numbers for viewership and stuff, didn't it?
Yeah. So fast forward to now, and you're right. I don't know if I'm feeling the buzz. Did you do a bit of research?
I did do a bit of research. I asked around the office, and I'm going to speak on behalf of the women in the office because I've learned that they love it when you do that for them. It was slightly disappointing because it didn't entirely corroborate my working theory, but there was a mix.
Wanted them to know nothing about it, didn't
you? Actually, of the girls, there was only one who knew it was happening. And then I asked the fellas as well, and it was a mix. A couple people knew, but it was normally for some specific reason. Like, say, Dom was saying, like, he's a big Arsenal fan and, like, he follows all their socials. And he saw that they just signed Alessia Russo from Man United. Then that takes you down the kind of wormhole of the Women's World Cup. But there were people who are football fans who genuinely had absolutely no fucking idea at all. So it kind of supports what we're saying.
Well, I know that you basically only read the Reds top papers.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
When we were talking about this yesterday, I went onto the Times because I'm a paying subscriber, because obviously, you know, I'm an intellectual fellow and a fan of the right-wing media, it seems, and Murdoch. But no, and I went to the sports section, and what I noticed was there was no lead article. This is the day before it starts. And you go down a little bit, and there was an article about an open letter that the England team had written to the FA about not getting a player's bonus, and that other teams taking part around the world were. And while I thought, yeah, okay, like, that was their goal, to write an open letter, so they wanted it to be talked about and heard, I didn't see anything celebratory. I didn't see like something that was, you know, to your point about World Cup fever or the excitement of it. And I thought it's quite a negative story as your lead story on a World Cup campaign that's about to open.
Particularly when, to your point earlier about women's football being kind of sufficiently different from men's football. One of the main complaints about men's football is just the kind of exorbitant amounts of money that are in around the game now. The main gripe now to be in relation to finances, to money, I agree, muddies it a little bit.
Did you look at the red tops? Did you do a bit of red top research?
I did. I looked at all of the front pages of the red tops and the non-red tops, whatever you call them. I never look at them. And it was...
The broadsheets, James. The broadsheets.
I know. Weirdly, actually, the woke broadsheets had far...
Well, like The Telegraph. Is that a woke?
Yeah, that's woke. Yeah, not like The Guardian. But the ones that actually gave more attention to the Women's World Cup were the red tops. I'd say probably of all the papers, about half of them had some sort of feature on the front page. And about half of them had no mention of it at all, which again, like, I don't know, is that surprising? Basically, my theory with this is I don't think it's really permeated mainstream culture yet. Although, actually, I'd go further than that because I've been on like the Mitre socials and stuff, and I was on them yesterday. There's not a lot of like chatter on like football Twitter, football Instagram about the Women's World Cup. So even in the micro communities in which it should be most relevant, there still isn't that much of a buzz. But I think at this point last year, at the start of the Euros, I think there was even less. And then by the end, as the Lionesses started winning a few games, I think more and more people got interested and more people started watching and more people started talking about it. So that's kind of what I imagine is likely to happen this time around as well.
Yeah, I agree. We might be ringing the bell of non-interest a little bit early.
Yeah, no, because
right?
I'm thinking for the Euros last year, I'm not even sure I knew it was happening until like a couple of weeks in, for example. And then I think people do just kind of get swept up with it a bit. Admittedly, if the Lionesses get knocked out in the group stage, then maybe not. Maybe we'll get even less interested. This is going to kind of progress us on to the next topic, because we're going to talk about some ads, because there's actually been some really good creative work done. But what I haven't seen and what's been lacking, and I think maybe this is what makes a difference, is from the broadcasters themselves, like BBC, ITV, I haven't seen anything at least. And if there has been a load of stuff, then maybe you can put that down to my ignorance. But it should be almost utterly impossible for me to be ignorant of something like that if I'm a football fan, if they're pushing it hard enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it should be top of the iPlayer. There should have been like documentaries. I mean, like, again, there might be.
I don't know, I'm not even necessarily saying that it should be, though. It's more just an observation that it isn't, because I'm not sure anyone's doing anything wrong by not being interested in women's football. Like, you're not judged to be some sort of bigot if you're not interested in volleyball or whatever. There is a kind of undertone, and we'll get onto this with one of the ads, that it's somewhat morally righteous to be interested in women's football. And it felt like there was a real, quite concerted push behind that idea over the last few years. And that's just why I'm surprised we're not seeing it now as much as I would have expected.
Look, I guess if I was the director general of the BBC, a communist state-funded television broadcaster, jokes, people, calm down. I guess I think I would want to see some lead-in to it, because I think there is a state side to it, to publicise it, which I think when there are so many sponsors involved, when there's so much money being thrown around, I think there's a sort of like a duty not to answer those sponsors, but to understand that this is being backed and therefore we should back it.
I'm more saying it's a missed opportunity rather than anything else.
We're the European Cup holders. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. For a World Cup, normally there's an absolute bum fight between any brand that's even tangentially associated with football in the slightest or with the World Cup. And there hasn't been as much this time. There's been some examples of pretty good ads from like the top tier obvious names, but not so much from the people trying to get a little piece of the pie.
Do you think there is a leaning into the woke-a-rama aspect of it with brands publicising it? Do you think that they lean into the fact that it is a sport that feels like it should be celebrated because it has a minority fan base, essentially?
Yeah, minority is an interesting word for over 50% of the population, but all right. A minority fan base, another way of saying nobody gives a shit. But yeah, it's not like it's closed off to anyone. Do I think they play on that?
I'll give you an example. So I was doing some work for the ECB women's team and I came across this. If you ask Alexa, who has scored the most goals in international football, she will reply Cristiano Ronaldo with 118 goals. The answer, if you're taking it at face value, is Christine Sinclair with 190 international goals, a Canadian.
Yeah, but it's not though, is it? I really hate that argument, right? It's just, it's a different sport, and that's why it's still referred to as football and women's football. If that's the main source of injustice, then I think it feels like a pretty weak complaint. There might be a youth player who scored more goals. It's almost expecting quite a lot to change very quickly, because when you talk about football, you don't preface everything with men's football. Oh, I can't wait to go see the men's Everton team this weekend and all that sort of stuff. So I think these are little kind of intricacies of language that don't really mean that much.
I think the interest really though, and taking the open letter of the FA as an example and why brands are getting involved, is because it is an opportunity for more revenue for everyone, right? Yeah. So there is this idea that if we all back this, if more people are into it, if more people benefit from playing from it, so more young girls benefit and, you know, come through, you know, academies and the rest of it, right? Then you're opening up a huge new revenue stream, right? I think that's...
That's what it's got potential to be, an enormously virtuous circle that kind of benefits everyone on the way around. So yeah, no, I completely agree on that.
I tell you what, my 7-year-old daughter does like to remind me that when you say that, you know, England had never won the World Cup, contrary to what you're saying, she's like, what? I don't understand. But like, she doesn't get the difference between the World Cup and the European Cup, and she'll say, we won it. So she doesn't have what you're talking about. She doesn't have that semantics yet built into her. So there is an argument for those semantics, and I get what you're saying. It is
I'd like to point out that she is a 7-year-old. What other arguments has Betty got?
Well, let's bring her on as a guest next week. She can crit some of your work. Yeah. Right, I think it's an interesting point. Why I'm going to that is I want to see how other brands have approached it. So you've got some examples. How have brands approached it in terms of there is an educational piece to be done, perhaps, with the women's game. Like you said right at the beginning, if you buy into fathers like me, then you have more of a chance of them passing that on down because, again, they're already interested in the sport. So there's the educational aspect as well, which is if you want people to be into women's football, you can't just take the men's game and transport your knowledge onto the women's game. It's not the same setup. Brazil is something like in the odds, like 10th to win it. You know, it's not the same hierarchy that has been built out of the men's game. And I'm interested to know out of the ads that you've brought, how brands have approached that.
Yeah, well, I think it's a two-parter ideally, isn't it? There's an educational job to be done, but then also an emotive job to be done as well. So it's kind of, here's all the raw information and here's why you should give a shit about it. So one that I saw, which I think does it pretty well, is from, you might have heard of them, Nike, who are probably the best when it comes
Nike.
To... I say Nike, but yeah, Nike.
I say Nike as well, but I realise that I'm in a minority when I say that. I go, I say Nike, I'm so sorry.
Okay, edit it, Pablo. Nike, who are probably the best when it comes to football ads.
Nike.
Do you know, their one for the Men's World Cup was fucking great as well, with the weird metaverse glitching kind of de-aging load of players. And they've just released their ad for the Women's World Cup, and it's also pretty fucking good. So the basic premise is some guy is watching the 1999 World Cup with his young daughter, and when Brandy Chastain scores the winning penalty for the US, he celebrates and slips on a banana skin, bonks his head, and goes into a coma for 24 years, and then finally wakes back up in the present day and obviously has an awful lot to catch up on. And then what comes after that is basically like an introduction to the women's game as it is now, focusing in particular on how much it's progressed during that kind of 24 years since he's been out of action, since he's been asleep.
Yeah, I mean, just from a nuts and bolts, a lot of it's very familiar to me because you've got players from all around the world. Obviously, they're not all going to be in that same shoot. So it plays on that sort of like vignette, mention a player, see them somewhere else, see them in action, which is something that football does in general. And I love it, actually. It's a nice thing where you suddenly go into another world. And that's what I thought this advert did. You mentioned the Nike multiverse advert, and it's very madcap, wasn't it? It was really hyper real. And I thought that they'd carried that over quite nice into this. It had the same feels. It was certainly part of that same universe that they invented or forged within that ad. And I liked that they took that over. But like you say, the key points for me that I loved about it is like totally celebratory, leaning into that dad and daughter thing. I thought that was probably a strategy, but it wasn't telling me what to think. It was showing me that this is great. It was showing me like the players. It was getting me educated, but not in a way that I thought like, you really should like women's football. It's important.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's what I was going to say is rather than it being preachy and saying you should be interested in women's football, and if you're not, you're a bastard, it's more just showing you a load of stuff that could interest you. And what I thought was particularly clever about it is they're basically focusing on the individual and almost like mythologizing around the most notable players in the competition. Because I feel like, and this is probably part of a larger point, obviously this is Nike doing this because they want to get big name athletes out there, but I feel like it's probably an easier in for the somewhat uninitiated to buy into the stories of like an individual, because there are a load of interesting stories in the women's game. Most people just don't know them. And I think that's what women's football is still really missing at this point, is like a superstar with mainstream appeal. Because the thing is, it's a weird analogy, but like that's what happened with Ronda Rousey in MMA when she joined the UFC. And MMA is probably one of the sports that like, without knowing anything, you'd most associate with like toxic masculinity. Like you think, oh, it's blokes in their pants having a fight in a fucking car park. But weirdly, they're actually one of the sports that like arguably treat male and female athletes with like the most equity. Like you'll get female champions headlining cards with male champions on their undercard. And that all stemmed from Ronda Rousey breaking through because she had such an interesting story and she was just such a kind of effervescent personality that even then she retired like 7 years ago and people have stayed interested. And I think once women's football has that sort of superstar, then I think that's what's going to make an enormous difference. So focusing on these individuals in that way, even I know it's just like a little 10-second introduction, it's still just starting to get that recognition. So now when you watch the tournament, you might think, oh yeah, that's the so-and-so from China.
I did have that sort of like little patriotic way moment when they had a...
We got one!
Yeah! Just sort of like talking from a sort of stylistic angle and like sort of art direction, is such a good ad. Mm. So it starts starts off in 1999, but they really make it look like 1999. It's kind of like heritage-y. The dad is not like your normal dad. He's got like this big hair, looks kind of crazy. There's funny little things like, you know, when he wakes up and things are going wrong, he's like asking, is this the Y2K thing? Like making reference to the millennium bug. It's just really nicely done, really social looking and just really on the money. The funny thing about Nykra is you can really easily say, like, cause it's a big budget advert, like, yeah, but it's not, you've got a load of money, right? They're always going to do that. But they push themselves to be contemporary, on the money, excellence. They act like a competitor brand. Mm. They really look like they are just trying to get your attention in a way that's really emotive and taking risks that other brands still don't do, which is, you know, not something that you usually do when you're way out there in top position. I don't really know the numbers. I'm guessing that in football, they're the number one brand. You know, it could be Adidas, I'm not sure.
I guess it would have to be Nike.
So yeah, it's a really good ad. And yeah, it got me knowing about some of the players I don't know. And again, there was no preachiness to it whatsoever.
Yeah, no, it just had a lovely feeling of momentum the whole way through. Like, it's not a short advert, but it flows really quickly. And I agree, the fact that it's Nike and they're already like the biggest name, they've got all the money and they've got a load of players. The fact that they've still done something creative and interesting rather than just boring because they can play it safe because they're already the big dogs, I think is commendable.
So you have another ad, which has got like a bit of a different take, right?
I do have another ad. It's got a bit more bite to it, I guess you could say. So yeah, next one may be an indication, because we're saying that we don't feel the buzz. Maybe we're too wrapped up in our little British bubble, because after all, Brexit does mean fucking Brexit. But on the continent, in France specifically, Orange, as in the telephone network who used to be here and now EE, they've released a World Cup ad, and it's got a little bit of crafty jiggery-pokery in it. So basically, it's a compilation of the France men's team, so Griezmann, Mbappe, etc., all of them absolutely murking opposition teams. It's real footage. But then comes the big rug pull. It wasn't actually them, it's a deep fake. And the entire montage was made of real clips of the France women's team, but with the men's players' faces superimposed onto them.
Yeah, and I think it's got a nice little line saying something like, these are the blues that we love, and then there's that sort of like rug pull. That these are the blues.
I think it was actually better than that. I think it was, it could only be Le Bleu. And then the point is, the line is still true, but they've just expanded the definition beyond what you'd initially think as Le Bleu.
Yeah, so this advert, again, I'm just going to jump to art direction, slightly more scraggly looking, just by virtue of it's supposed to look real. It's not supposed to feel like it's in any way being directed, right?
But it's real footage, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's real footage. I spotted it, because first of all, I started watching it and I was like, the numpty, fuck all to do with women's, wait a sec. And I saw Mbappe and he kind of looked a little bit CGI. And then I started to think, wait a sec, have I got this wrong? Is this actually women? And then I noticed that some of the stadium wasn't completely full behind them, which is sadly still one of the problems in women's football. They're not playing to 90,000 yet. And then when the rug pull did come and you've got like that sort of like close up of Griezmann, isn't it? Doing like a heart or something like that.
Yeah.
I was kind of ready for it. But then I'd been sort of prepped.
Okay,
I mean?
I think you were probably more tuned into it than most then. I thought it was pretty, if you're not looking at the minutiae of the detail, because having watched it back now again, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. But the first time of watching, it just looks like people playing football and you don't think too much of it. And that's what I think, it's potentially the best execution of deep fakery I've seen in an ad, because I feel like when we've seen it before, it's only been done as like a pretty obvious trope. It's like playing on the phone, oh, here's a deep fake, isn't this funny? Whereas this time it was actually, it genuinely kind of tricks the viewer, I suppose. And it is designed to catch people out, isn't it? Because like, for example, if there was some, some bloke, so he holds the positions, both that, and this is Pierre saying this, not me, both women are crap at football, but also that this montage shows some good football when Pierre thought it was men that were playing. But then when the rug pull comes, they're immediately forced to like confront the incongruity of their position, which I think is very different to the Nike ad, isn't it? Because it is slightly more finger pointing, more accusatory, like, yeah, you thought it, you cared on a load of blokes, didn't you, you nasty bigot, you. But I still think it's pretty well done.
Yeah, so that was the interesting thing about this, like, who's that advertising to? Is it advertising to women so that they can go, fuck yeah, exactly, like, people don't see us, they don't recognize us as of yet within the higher echelons of world male football, right? Or is it to us? Because the football in it is great. That's something to sort of like mark out. There was something that was a little bit more preachy about this and less celebratory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, potentially. Although I'm now thinking about it. Obviously, it's a French ad. It was played in France. The idea of Le Bleu is quite powerful. So tapping into that kind of existing, like, good feeling that the French have towards their national team and playing on that, I think maybe it's not meant to be preachy. It's meant to be kind of empowering, saying, come on, let's all kind of get together and get behind the team. So yeah, maybe a little
bit. But it's talking to people that like men's football, right? That's what it's doing.
Yeah? Yes. Yeah.
There's no denying it. That's who that is aimed at. It's aimed at guys or fans of men's football saying, like, by the way, I know we are one of the key people in world football and have been for a long time, but you need to support the women's team because we are great as well. And we are part of that same nation. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, it's a really good ad. Let's put it out there. It's a really good ad. It's very well done.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like we're being down on this one. I actually think I might even prefer this one to the Nike one. I just think it's a really clever idea. And I'm glad they did it because I didn't spot it. So I quite enjoyed the twist. I quite enjoyed being
tricked. It's because you're a boomer, isn't it? It touched you inside. Like, maybe I am a bit of a boomer.
Maybe that could be it.
Maybe that's what it was. You were touched by it. It was Target. Yeah, no, listen, I think it's a great ad. Like, really interesting, really captivating. And I thought the delivery of it was great as well. Having said that, I do prefer the Nike ad. Definitely prefer the Nike ad. Cooler, more celebratory, lent into the dad thing, which I thought was a really nice touch, but without doing it in a heavy-handed way. And then just that sort of like setting them up like Avengers thing, that sort of like almost the original Trainspotting poster where it looks like Top Trumps and you've got, you know, all the key people on it. I thought it was just uber cool. And yes, it's Nike.
I'm with you. And that's what I do think is interesting. Because again, like, asking around the office, some of the people who were aware of it because they'd seen it in the drum or whatever. So I do think Adland, for want of a better term, has potentially tried to kind of get a grip, stake their claim on the tournament, but it just hasn't been pushed in the mainstream quite as much as you would expect yet. So I do think, and I expect that will probably pick up, as we said, as the tournament goes on. But we'll see. Who knows?
Like, I guess one of the key things is advertising as advertising, whatever. Real life is real life. And what these tournaments do is the unexpected human moments that are fuck all to do with sponsors or money. Jill Scott shouting wanker like last time. It's those sorts of moments that you can't see coming that I'm looking forward to. And there will be a moment like this in the World Cup. Hopefully it is that moment that you're talking about where it's transcendent, where it raises into sort of like wider culture because there is something that's happened that is like, oh my God, did you see that? It could be a Jill Scott shouting wanker moment, or it could be like just some great team play or, you know, like grace or whatever it is with opponents. Who the fuck knows? I'm kind of looking forward to it. I love in a sort of multiverse way that we are stepping into a multiverse of possibilities, and in a month's time, fuck knows where we'll be.
I'm with you. Wrap it up because we've got less than a minute left.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much for listening, everyone. James, where do you find the Cool Shit newsletter?
Zachagency.com/cool-SHT.
All right. Brilliant. We will see you in 2 weeks. I'm not a fan of this 2 weeks. I think we should be back every week, don't you?
Well, we're not in the office next week, so it must have to be another remote one. But maybe.
Romantic special number two coming your way.
Second date, baby.
All right. Thanks very much, James. Cheers,
mate.
Bye.